easier classes than even my professor was like.
I should get your number one.
You can reach out to me anytime.
If you own a business and you have employees, or you are an employee and you work for a business, can you be sued for the actions of the other side? If you own a business, can you be sued because of what your employees do? That's a better way to answer it. Possibly. And if you are an employee, can you be sued for what your business does?
Depends on the type of business.
Possibly. It depends. It always depends upon the circumstances. What we are going to start off with today, and then we'll do a couple of the cases, is what is commonly referred to as agency. And if any of you are aspiring to one day be an entrepreneur and to go into business for yourself, one, you are going to get whacked with lots of taxes. But two, you also might be responsible for the actions of anyone you employ. Through what is known as the agency relationship. Very simple. An agency relationship, like any relationship, requires that there be two parties involved. Sorry, you cannot have a relationship with yourself, legally speaking. But in terms of agency relationships, it typically involves the principal, who is the boss or the employer, and the agent, the person who has been authorized to act on behalf of the principal. So, principal, in charge. Agent, authorized to act for the principal. Questions so far? All right. How does one establish such a relationship? Because generally speaking, if you are the principal, you may, and emphasis is on may, have substantial liability for what the agent does. Again, of course, it always depends. It always depends. And sometimes there's actually disputes over whether such a relationship exists or not. Because if there is no relationship, then the principal cannot be liable. So, how does one create such a relationship under the law? Well, there's a couple of necessary components. The first is kind of like a no duh. There has to be an identified principal and an identified agent. There has to be an identified principal and there has to be an identified agent. What do you think I mean by identified? Identified.
Like easily recognizable?
Yeah. The principal must know who the agent is. The agent doesn't necessarily have to know who the primary principal is, but the agent must know somebody that's involved. You can't work for a ghost, to put it in plain English. You can't employ a ghost. principal must know who the agent must know. All right, two. There must be mutual consent. Mutual consent. Mutual consent. What are they each consenting to? Well, the principal is giving their consent for the agent to work on their behalf, and the agent is giving their consent to work on behalf of the principal. Mutual consent. It cannot be one-sided. Both have to agree. And of course, that consent involves everything that's involved. What is the limit of the relationship? FYI, this very morning, I was tasked with serving as an agent for my son, who is currently on deployment, serving the United States Navy, somewhere in the world, classified. But after he returned from his last deployment, Einstein decided he was going to go buy a condo. Because he's stationed down in Norfolk, Virginia. Rather than paying rent, he just decided to buy it. He got one for a pretty good deal. Nice place. But the day after he put the deposit down, he learned he's going to get deployed again. So he was not able to execute all the documents. So we established an agency relationship. I agreed to act as attorney in fact for him. He gave me consent to sign the documents. And we executed the purchase and sales this morning. I couldn't do anything else. We clearly specified what my powers would be. My job was to sign the papers related to that condo unit. Nothing else. I agreed to do it. He agreed to let me do it. And I'm just thankful I was able to do it remote, because the last thing I wanted to have to do is drive down to Virginia to go sign papers. I would have done it for him. Told him I would, but luckily I did not have to. Now, why is this important? Well, we know on the piece of paper who we each were. We were clearly identified. We both agreed. He agreed to let me sign. I agreed to sign for him. And then the third thing happened. I was subject to his control. I was subject to his control. Meaning, he could have told me if he wanted to, don't sign. Or he could have told me to sign. It wasn't my decision. He decided for me to sign, so I signed for him, subject to control. One, identified parties. Two, mutual consent. Three, subject to control of the principal. And the last one. For the principal's benefit. For the principal's benefit. What I did was not for me. What I did was for him. He needed me to sign for him. So I signed for him. Why? Because he bought himself a condo. Do you have all four elements? By the way, you need all four to be present. At the end of each line, it should be and. If it's not all four, you do not have a valid agency relationship. All right, let's go through this. I don't think I need to give you any more examples of principal and agent. Mutual consent. Here's an easy example to put next to it. You don't have to use my example. It could be as simple as something like, you had a neighbor who had a dog. Your neighbor asked you, well, they had to work late, could you go and put my dog out? And you say, okay, I'll go put your dog out. That's mutual consent. Easy as that. easy as that. Control. Control. The key to control is it eliminates completely agent's discretion. Agent has no authority to make a decision other than doing the bidding of the principal. So, if my son wanted me to buy a car for him, he would tell me what make and model and what color and what year. All the details. And then I couldn't deviate. That's the only thing I could buy. By the way, the same is true if you work, if you think about it. If you work for a company like McDonald's, and you are entrusted with cooking french fries in the fryolator, the corporation, the principal, tells you everything that's involved in doing that duty. They give you the fries that have to be fried. They provide the oil, the precise oil that needs to cook. They tell you what temperature. They tell you how long. They tell you how they're to be stored, how they're to be distributed. Everything is all outlined for you by McDonald's. You can't go in and decide one day, well, I like my fries a little soggy, so I'm not going to quite cook them as long. Maybe you like your fries a little more crispy. Nope, nope, nope. Or maybe you don't like salt on them. Or maybe you like tons of salt. Maybe you like a little cheese mixed in with those fries. You have no discretion. You must comply. Because what happens if you don't? Do exactly what the principal wants you to do. What happens to you?
You can be sued.
No, you're not going to be sued.
No.
Will you be employed there anymore? No, your relationship will be terminated. Because FYI, if you work for a place like McDonald's, you are an employee at will. Which means the company can fire you for whatever reason they want. Just like you can quit for whatever reason you want. You're not bound. Unless you're in a contract. All right, lastly, the key element, not that all the other three are not important, but is acting for principal's benefit. There must be some type of fiduciary relationship that's in place. Meaning, the principal is getting something of value out of it. And acting as a fiduciary means that you are financially responsible to protect the interests of the principal. You cannot waste your employer's money for shits and giggles. No, you have a duty to follow the procedures established by the principal so the principal can make money. And you are legally bound to protect that financial interest. Imagine for me this. You work for a casino. Mrs. Professor Lemanic has a bad relationship with slot machines. Which means I have a bad relationship with places like Mohegan Sun. And I tell you, they scalp them my wallet every time we walk through that door. And as we give them our wampum, lots and lots of wampum. So much wampum, it actually hurts like, no more, please. There is someone who's going to collect all that out of the slot machine. Their job is to take it out of the slot machine, put it in a metal box, bring it to the back room. They can't take it and put it in their pocket. There's no extra money. It's all the casinos. Makes sense, right? Makes sense. Why? Well, the employee has a legally imposed responsibility to protect the principal's fiduciary interests. So, if you decide to steal the wampum, yes, you will be sued. But I know people who work for the casinos, they actually have to sign documents that they accept that if they do steal money, that they will be criminally prosecuted. They will go to jail. Even if it's just an extra dollar. Because after all, they'll never notice a dollar. Go to the casino and look up. The eyes in the sky are everywhere. Now, how do you prove it? Well, obviously, the best way is to have some form of writing. But you don't need a writing. You don't need a writing. You can make an agency relationship orally with words. Well, Professor, how can you prove it? How can you prove it? Simple. All you need to do is show that the agent did anything that could potentially benefit the principal. That could be something as small as showing up at a particular location at a particular time. Now, there is one exception. One exception. It's what's known as the equal dignities rule. The equal dignities rule. So you can have an oral relationship. But the one exception is what's known as the equal dignities rule. And this is something very simple. If the agent is required to execute a writing, so an agent has to sign a written contract, then the terms of the relationship must be in writing. If the agent has to execute a writing, the terms of the relationship must be in writing.
That's known as the equal dignities rule.
So I will go back to what I did for my son this morning. I literally had to sign a whole bunch of documents in advance, granting me the authority to act as attorney in fact. Because for the final, when we do contracts, we're going to see that if you are going to buy or sell any interest in land, that is one of the types of contracts that must be in writing. So because I signed the purchase agreement that allowed him to buy the condo, his agreement to have me work for him had to be in writing.
Equal dignities rule. Questions on that?
Note number two, unless it's something that has to be in writing and it is an oral agreement, the basis of the agreement does not have to be formal. Meaning, if you just have an agreement with somebody to help them with whatever they want, whenever they want, that's pretty vague, right? If that's good enough for both parties, that works. You don't need to have something as specific, like the agreement that I have with my son, very specific. I could only act on today. I only could act in regards to a particular property. I could only act with certain... Everything was spelled out. But back when I was a kid, I used to help out a local farmer whenever it was time to collect the hay. Never really had any deal. Whenever it was hay and season, if I didn't have to play baseball or do any of my other obligations, I would show up and help them whenever I could with whatever I could. And that was good enough. We had a handshake. And he would always give me a couple of bucks whenever I wanted to help them out. Until I got to about 13, and then he started giving me beers, and that was even better. I grew up in a different time. Don't judge me. All right. And number three, we're going to talk about all of the necessary requirements of a contract. Well, the agency agreement itself does not need to meet all of the elements of a contract. It literally could just be a handshake. The key is, you know who each other is. You both agree. You're doing something for the principal that he can tell you what to do, or she, and it's for their benefit. That's all that's necessary. Questions? All right. In terms of a relationship, there are a couple of aspects of which you need to be aware of. There are duties involved. There is ways to terminate the relationship. And there is potential liability. So there are duties we have to be mindful of. How do we terminate the relationship? And who's liable for who or what? Questions on page one. Let's start off with the duties that agents owe to principals. The duties that agents owe to principals. Well, truth be told, because the agent is trying to do something for the financial betterment of the principal, and value and money is not an easy thing. It's complicated. It's technical. Truth be told, what the agent must do for the principal is multifaceted. It's not just one part. There are different sides. There are different perspectives. And at any time, principal could accuse agent of breaching those duties. And obviously, if agent is in breach of a duty, there could be liability. Remember, can't have any liability if there is no duty. But if there is a duty, and the duty's breached, may be liable. Duty number one. As I said, agent does not have discretion. Agent must do what principal asks or demands. Why? Well, because of the first duty that agent owes to principal. Agent must be loyal to the principal. The agent must be loyal to the principal in all things. In all things. So, one of my first, I started working when I was like 10, because back when I was a kid, kids could actually get paper roads. And that was pretty good money for a kid my age. I always had money, that was really nice. And I like having money, so when I got old enough to go work, I got a job in a store, a hardware store, when I was 15. And that was a very different thing. That actually kind of sucked, because the boss would tell me to do things I really didn't want to do. And one of the things that I hated doing, because it was hardware stores, I had to go out in the barn and I had to go inventory stuff. Stuff that hadn't been on the shelves for like 20 years. But no, I had to go climb up in the loft of the barn, that was the big warehouse, on like a 90 degree day when it was like 130 degrees uptime, and it was dirty and gross and grimy, and I had to go count stuff. Counts that probably hadn't changed in 20 years. But no, I had to do it. It was awful. And I tried fudging the numbers. But my boss caught me lying. You know what my boss made me do? Come in a day and work for free. And go and count it correctly. Because he paid me when I didn't count it. So he did not pay me to count it right. Why? I was not allowed to lie.
And by the way, my folks were on board with it 100%. So you know what I learned? If your boss asks you a question, you tell the truth in all things.
But legally speaking, I actually owed them a duty to tell them the truth, even though I didn't like it. Additionally, I have to obey, or agents have a duty to obey instructions to the T.
Again, you like your fries a little crispy, but you work for McDonald's. Does not matter. You put the fries in the fry later for the exact time, with the fry later set to the exact same temperature as mandated by McDonald's.
So I have a question about that. And I'm not going on the McDonald's thing.
This is
more of a real life thing right here. So duty to obey instructions. Your company tells you to bill medical a certain way. You know, because you are a certified person that has to go through all of these hoops to know what the legal ramifications are of billing, and that they tell you to bill a certain way, which is wrong. Does the law of how you are supposed to bill medically supersede this duty to obey instruction?
Ready for what the next part I was going to say was?
Or did I catch it? Did I jump the gun?
Agent must obey unless principal directs agent to behave illegally or unethically.
Bright minds think alike.
I'm a medical biller.
You have to do what your boss tells you unless, big capital letters, it's literally how I have in my notes, big capital letters, unless the principal tells agent to act unethically or illegally. Do you have a right to commit a crime?
No.
Does your boss have a right to commit a crime? Does your boss have the right to tell you to commit a crime? No, not at all. It's as easy as that. Basic legal principles.
But unless it's unethical or illegal, you must obey. Because again, there could be consequences. Third duty. Duty of care. A duty of care. An agent has to engage in reasonable,
that was way too many bubble bowls in there, reasonable behavior when acting on behalf of the principal.
The agent must act with reasonable care.
So, if you are entrusted to drive a vehicle for your employer, you have a duty to drive it in accordance to all of the legal speed limits and all of the rules of the road. Yeah, maybe you're like me and you just can't drive 55. and you like seeing the other side of triple digits. You can do that in your own vehicle. But if you do that in your employer's vehicle, you are breaching your duty of care. Because the company could be liable if you get in an accident with that vehicle. That company could be liable if you get pulled over and you get a ticket and the company suffers the insurance hits and penalties. You do not have a right to commit harmful acts that could harm the company. And here's the funny thing. The expectations of this duty increases if you have specialized skills. The higher skilled you are, the higher duty of behavior you must adhere to. So think about the guys that operate heavy equipment. You have to go out and get special license, special insurance to drive the big cranes and the bucket loaders and all those things. Well, if you have to get a special license to get a job, you're going to be held to the highest standards of that license. Even if it's a gratuitous agent, meaning even if you're acting for free, if you'd agree to work for a charitable organization, you have to engage in a duty of care to protect that organization's interests. That's the reason why Legion members should not be getting in brawls in the bar. That's not a good look.
All right.
And lastly, agents have a duty to provide information.
Agents have a duty to provide the principal with any information that's related to the relationship.
So, one of the hardest conversations that I had to have, speaking of the American Legion, was with the past post commander when this was a real tough one. I almost got kicked out, but I had to do it when I had to mention that I thought one of his family members was stealing from the post. That was a very uncomfortable conversation. But I had a duty to tell him. He wanted to railroad me out. Well, until the finance officer pulled up the cameras and went back and said, oh, look at what LeManic said on this date at this time and this time and this. Oh. The truth hurts. But if you're an agent, you have a duty to share the truth, even if the principal doesn't want to hear it. Questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
The behavior piece, that, like, would this be where some of this, I know you were using the, you could drive 100 miles per hour.
In your own vehicle.
In your own vehicle. But if you get a ticket, can the said principal hold that against you that you got that ticket?
Oh, if you are an insurance risk, absolutely. They could, if you have a whole, then the boss knows that you drive recklessly, you have OUIs, DUIs, speeding tickets, they do not have to give you access to their vehicle. And if your job is to drive with them, that could be grounds for termination.
Okay. And then similar thing of, like, is this where some of the, you work for a nonprofit, you are volunteering time, where the duty of behavior would be is you're representing that, be careful what you post on social media type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where that would fall.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Yeah, if you work for somebody, whether it's volunteer or employed, your employer can hold you accountable for what you post on your TikToks and your X's and your Insta snaps and all those other fun things. Because if I see you and you're my employee constantly posting about how wasted you got, and I happen to notice that you got wasted on a Tuesday, and you got to work for me on Wednesday, and then I see you week after week after week, how do I know you're not coming in intoxicated still? Do I really want you working for me?
Because you represent my company.
All right. Any other questions? Well, what happens if the agent breaches these duties? What can the principal do about it?
Oh, well, they can do lots of things. They can sue you
and seek compensatory damages.
Hold you financially responsible for any harm from the breach that you caused.
If you're engaging in like embezzlement, skimming off the top, the principal also can take you to court. And I love, this was, I just love the way like one of my law professors used to say this word. Disgorgement. Anyone ever hear that word before? Disgorgement? Disgorge is literally to take back. To take back. So if you embezzle $10,000, you can be forced to turn it back over. Or if you took a computer, or if you did anything else that got some type of gain, whatever value that you denied your principal, they can reclaim it through disgorgement. And if you acted outside the scope and you contracted in the name of your principal, but you didn't have authority to do so, the principal also has a right to go to court and rescind any transactions which you engaged in. And, oh man, I lived a very fun life. And when you get older, you'll be able to tell stories as well. So back when I was in college, I actually worked at a package store. And I worked for, I guess technically my boss was the old man. He was about 80 and he was looking to retire. And he wanted to turn the business over to his son. But his son was really kind of like the child of many successful businessmen and women. They didn't actually build the company. They didn't actually sacrifice to get the company to where it was. And they just enjoyed the benefits of the company. And the son had a bad tendency to spend a lot of his time digging for nose clams. So there would be days when, particularly because, again, the old man was at his end of service and he was looking to stop, so he really wasn't there, and the son was there acting as the manager, and he'd be off because it was on the ground floor of a multi-story building, so he had an office upstairs, and he would just disappear for hours at a time. So basically, I would run the store. And one day, one of the Budweiser guys came in, sales guys, and we needed to order some Budweiser. Tried calling upstairs, got no response. We didn't have cell phones then, but he did have a pager, so I rang the pager, got no response. And it was on a Tuesday. The orders were delivered on a Thursday. And we had like 3 cases of Budweiser left in the store. So I knew basically if I didn't put it in, we would have no Bud in the store for the weekend. So I'm not dumb. I knew approximately how many cases we got every week. Why? Because I'm the guy who helped put them away. So I ordered about what the order would be. Salesman thanked me, left me a copy, and left. Well, about 2 hours later, the son came downstairs, and I told him what I did. I was all proud of myself. And he started losing his mind because he was as hyper as sometimes people get when they're taking for no science. And he tore me a new one. How dare you put this order in? You didn't know what I wanted. I mean, this is what I want. Ripped it up and called the sales guy, canceled the order. Canceled the order. And put another order in the way he wanted it to be. Why? Because I ordered 5 too many cases. But he had a right to do that. Why? Because I was actually not, I was the cashier, I was responsible for dealing with the empties, I was responsible for stocking the shelves. That was my job. I did not actually have the legal right to purchase the order. So, did I get in trouble for it? No, because I told the old man. That's the best way to not get fired by the manager, tell the old man. And the old man actually said kudos. But, in theory, the package store did not have to go forward with that order because I was not authorized to contract. Why do I mention that? Well, some of you may work for like a Walmart or some big stores or a clothing store or something like that. There are people who have the responsibilities for doing the ordering for the store. If you do not, you're in breach of duty. If you don't have that authority, you only can do what you're supposed to do. No more, no less. All right, questions? All right, so if the principal must do stuff, or rather the agent must do stuff for the principal, what if it's the other way around? Oh, yes. Principals actually owe duties to the agents, believe it or not. Typically, there are 3 things that principal must do for the agent if they have a valid agreement in place. Because, by the way, you cannot be forced into a relationship. Again, the second element of having a valid relationship, agency relationship, is must be based on mutual consent. If someone wants to ask you to go scrub the tiles that are in the sewerage pipe, and that's not your cup of tea, you don't have to agree to do that. But if you did agree to it, and you do what you're supposed to do, well then, very simple. Principal must do things for you. The first is to provide compensation if that's part of the agreement. If you make an agreement to do something for someone for money, they have to give you the monies. If they don't give you the monies, then they are in breach. Two, if as part of the agreement, you have to shell out your own cash to do whatever it is you agreed to do, then principal has a duty to reimburse. To reimburse reasonable expenses. Reasonable expenses. So long as that's part of the agreement. So some of you may one day work for a big corporation, and in working for a big corporation, you may be asked to go on business trips. Well, part of the agreement for people that travel for work typically is the company will pay for your transportation there and back. The company will provide reasonable housing expenses. And they may comp you a meal or two. Mrs. Professor Lemanic once, in one of her past lives, worked for one of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies. And she literally traveled the world.
She's been to Italy and France and the Netherlands and Germany and Singapore and Hong Kong and Brazil. Or God, I can't even remember all the places she's been to.
But the company had rules. If you fly domestic, okay, if you fly domestic, you had to sit in business class. Not coach, not first class, but business. So you get a little extended fever. And you had to stay at like a Marriott grade hotel. Maybe Hilton or something like that. And she could go and get two meals a day. She could either get like a brunch or a breakfast and then a dinner, or she could get lunch and a dinner, but two meals a day. All right. She was not allowed to stay at like the Crown Plaza, five-star hotel. She was not allowed to travel first class and then get picked up by a stretch limo. She was not allowed to go and have caviar and lobsters and escargot. She could go to like Bajas. That'd be okay for food. No alcohol. She could get a soda with her meal. There were all different types of rules. But there were some times when, while there was a whole bunch of people there, the company would allow for all of the employees to go out for dinner. And suddenly, that was a different terms and conditions. They could go out to a nice restaurant. They could go out and get, you know, more than Baja's or Burger King or Papa Gino's. And they may be allowed to get a reasonably priced adult beverage. Now, there was one business trip Mrs. Professor LeMann told me that they had a bar bill, just a bar bill, of $7,000. The company didn't pay for that. But some businesses do. It's all in the details.
Whatever the company allows you to do, that's what you're allowed to do.
And the third duty that a principal owes
the agent,
they must allow the agent to do their job. They have a duty to cooperate with the agent.
They can't be an ass to them. They cannot interfere with the agent's attempt to fulfill their duties. They cannot deny the agent the opportunity to work.
So, let's say you get a job, God help your soul, as a used car salesman or woman. If that's what you get for a job and you're paid commission, the boss can't come in and pinch all the sales. They can't tell you not to come in to work, or they can't stick you on a shift where no customers come in. That would be a breach of their duty to you to cooperate, to allow you to do whatever work it is that you're commissioned to do.
Questions? No questions? Take out a piece of paper. Put your name on it.
Thank you.
am I going to ask you? What am I going to ask you?
Negligence.
What are the elements of negligence? Go. When you're done, send him over to Heidi. Heidi's over here.
Yeah, done.
Seconds. Yeah, yeah.
Captain, my captain.
Duty, breach. Proximate cause. Foreseeability, harm. Six words. All right, let's do a case.
What was the first case on the homework?
Whiteman versus Consolidated Rail
Corp. All right, Whiteman v. Consolidated Rail Corp. Oh, that was a good case. No, that's not it. Do I have it in here? I must have it in here somewhere. Where's it? So look, what are some? Oh, there we go. All right,
Iraq. Issue. What's the issue?
Is the defendant liable for plaintiff's injury when both parties are partly responsible? And whether the trial court erred in its refusal to award punitive damages?
And punitive?
Yeah.
What's punitive damages? What's punitive? What does that mean? What's the purpose of punitive damages?
Punishment.
Punishment. Okay. Very good. Very good.
Easy. That was an easy question. Easy question.
All right. So, well, let's look about this. So, we have two people, two parties that are potentially responsible, at least in part and full, for harm that suffered. What rule do we have?
Because what is the issue that's at stake in the first half here? It's one of the last things we covered. This is one of the defenses to negligence.
Contributory negligence?
Oh, contributory negligence. Contributory negligence. All right, now this is a tough one. This is a tough one. Because if memory serves me correctly, we had two different rules that potentially are applicable. And it depends upon jurisdiction.
Right?
Is this a contributory negligence state, or is this a comparative negligence state? This is a comparative negligence. All right. Comparative negligence state, which means what?
Recovery reduced by percent of
fault. Okay. So if both parties are responsible, the damages are going to be reduced. Okay, excellent, excellent.
What happened in this case?
What happened in this case?
You have a guy named Alden Lee. And a guy named Mark Epstein. Alden Lee was the vice. He's like one of the workers from Mark Epstein.
Wait. Alden Leeds?
No.
We're doing the Whiteman case, the first case.
Alright.
That's alright.
Michelle Whiteman.
There you go.
She was driving her mother to February 19th, as she was approaching the railroad crossing, the lights were flashing, and Michelle...
Stop. What's a railroad crossing? Goes by what? Or over?
Over tracks.
And? What is intersecting? Railroad tracks and
cars.
Okay, so a road. So you got the tracks, you got the road. Okay. Could that be dangerous?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. And what would likely happen to the train if it hit a car? Okay, what would likely happen to the car? Okay, yeah. Plenty of videos online. See what happens when a vehicle gets hit by a train. Not much of the vehicle left. And not much left of the people in the vehicle. Okay, so in order to ensure that such accidents do not happen, what by law must be at every intersection where a railroad line crosses a road?
Flashing lights.
There must be some type of warning. Right? Some type of warning. In the more rural parts of the country, it could just be flashing lights. In the areas where it's more developed, they may have other particular aspects of technology, including the arm. Did you say there was an arm deployed here?
Yeah, there was.
There's an arm deployed. And what does the arm do? Stop the train?
It's so that traffic doesn't go by
the
train is going.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like a barrier. We'll put the bar up a little higher because you get the railroad track. You don't want the car going in, because the car could go, pow. Okay. So what happened?
I guess when the railroad when the train was about to come, she went around the
barriers. So the barriers is not an impenetrable barrier?
No.
Oh. So she saw the bar, she saw the lights, and she still decided to go through the intersection anyways. Why on God's earth would she decide to do this? What? Why?
There was a broken down train.
Well, hold on a second. Was she the only vehicle to do this? No. She was not the only vehicle to attempt to go around. Because the bar and the lights had been down for a while because? Which train? The train that was close enough. But was the train close enough moving? No. Because as it turns out, down the ways a bit was a train that was stopped. How do those activate? Does anybody know the technology that's involved?
It's on the rails. There's like a sensor that picks it up.
Well, back then there was. Now it's more modern technology.
Don't they have to press the button when they're close?
No. No. If you ever go to anywhere where there's a railroad crossing, there's a big silver box. And what that silver box is doing is it's shooting a laser beam down the track. At the exact height where there is a plate on the train. And the moment the laser beam is broken, that triggers the sensor. But back then, there used to be a pressure plate. They stopped doing that because, you know, nowadays they have the cars, the trucks, that actually have the rail things on it, that they actually can drive along. Well, all those now have the laser sensor. But back then, the only thing that could really set it off was something heavy, like a train. So the train is back here, hits the pressure plate, but it's not moving. So the light's coming down, and people are waiting, and waiting, and waiting, and waiting. And what do people have a tendency to do when they're waiting, and waiting, and waiting, and waiting, other than whipping out their phones and getting that instant dopamine hit? Oh, because someone liked my post from yesterday. Woo-hoo. They lose patience. And then they do what? They just do something that they probably should not do. All right, so train was there. Lights are down for a long time. People decide to sneak through. Question. Was there anyone from the railroad company or the police or anything at the intersection? Does anybody know? Was there any policeman there? Was there any railroad guy kind of like telling cars to go through? No. So, do you think the people that were waiting to go across the intersection knew that there was a train down that was causing the lights to go off? Could they hear a train coming? Probably not, because the train is dead. It stopped. So they must think, oh, this isn't working. Because do things break? Is it possible that it could be a false signal that's causing the lights to go down and you don't see anything coming? Geographically speaking, was there an oddity at this intersection? Was there something different about it that made looking down the line harder?
Wasn't there a stop train that blocked the view?
There was the stop train, and the stop train was at the start of a bend in the track, a corner. So the block train, so you pull up in your car, you look down the track, you see the train. Oh, that's the reason why it's going off. There's a train there. Train's not moving. So I'm going to go by. But there wasn't just one set of tracks. There were two. Because after one or two or three or however many cars got through safely, what happened when the young lady's car got to the intersection? Train came the other direction, around the corner, that was blocked by the stop train. And what did the train do to the car? Killed the car. Now we have a problem, do we not? Death. Ooh, we just learned about agency relationships. Do we have any potential breaches of duty by the agents acting on behalf of the principal here? What do the facts say?
The jury found that the agent demonstrated malice, and he was the proximate cause of the accident.
So one of the agents was the proximate cause. How?
He was negligent.
Negligent doing what? Yeah, this was negligence case. There was definitely a duty that was owed, and there was a breach of the duty, and the proximate cause of the harm that suffered, which was foreseeable, was definitely the breach of that duty. But what was the breach? And I believe there were multiple breaches.
He's going to drive the train.
How is he driving the train?
Oh, at a reckless speed.
Oh, did you know that trains actually have speed limits? Trains aren't allowed to go as fast as they can go. There are actually posted speed limits along the lines. So when the train goes by out behind Papageno's, do you ever see a train? Have you ever seen a train go by? Because those are active tracks. Do they go through? Like, so I was on Amtrak coming back from New York City, and I was a nerd and I was bored, so I did a quick search on how fast am I going? Because there's an app that actually can calculate with GPS how fast I was going. And I was going about 80 miles an hour at one point. That was pretty damn cool, because you could feel like you're going fast. But that was just a straightaway that was down in southern Connecticut. The rest of the ways, we were going about like 40-ish. Well, what determined the speed that the train could go? Well, what's around the area? Trains go by here slowly because it's in close proximity to businesses and homes and all the rest.
And the weather.
The weather also plays a part.
Don't take it in the summer.
Don't take it in the summer?
It goes so slow.
Because of the heat that expands the track.
Oh, the friction, yeah.
Oh, it takes like 3 hours.
All right, but here, this was a busy intersection, right? It was not really a rural place. So they had a reduced speed. And did the driver of the train that struck the girl follow the speed limit? No, so you got a breach there. What about, as I said before, did any people from the broken down train go to assist? Because do you think people in the broken train knew another train was coming?
They should have.
They probably did. Did they do anything about it? So you got a breach of duty there. Okay. Do we have another breach of duty?
They're supposed to blow their horns when they hit a crossing.
Which, did they?
It doesn't sound like it.
I don't think the facts said they did. What about the young lady? Did she have a duty?
Yeah, follow the rules.
Oh, she had a civil duty, yeah, to follow the rules. Did she follow the rules?
No.
What are you not supposed to do?
Go around.
Ever? Even if the crossing guard thing is broken, are you supposed to go through? No, but what did she decide to do? And what happened to her?
As I always told my kids, don't be dumb. Can't get dumber than this. But who's more at fault? That's the question. Who's more at fault? This is not a contributory negligence state. If there was a contributory negligence state, if the driver was 1% responsible, no liability for defendant. But this is a comparative negligence, which means if the defendant is more than 50% responsible, there will be liability, but the liability will be reduced by the percentage that plaintiff contributed to her own harm.
Right? So what happened here? Let's apply the facts. What did the jury decide? What did the appeals court say? And how does it all come together?
Our conclusion. Is the railroad company negligent? How?
They're not following the law.
Not following the law. You said malice was involved as well? Well, where's the malice? Where's the malice come from?
Reckless speeding.
Reckless speeding. Oh, yeah. You do know that, right? Even if you drive a car, if you go 20 miles an hour over the posted speed limit, that's considered criminal speeding. And you will be held for gross negligence. More severe punishment. Okay, so we know there's a breach, but what percentage of the harm did the girl cause to herself?
40%.
So not quite 50, because it was 50, she would not get anything, but 40%. So the railroad company must pay. How much for the damages that was awarded? So how much of the million is she going to get? Now you got to reduce by the percentage. So how much is she going to get? $600,000. Did someone say something about punitive damages?
That's what they were deciding.
Were punitive damages imposed?
At first, no.
At first, no, but it had to go back and get decided, right? All right, questions on this case? All right, we're going to deal with the other two when we come back on Wednesday. We're going to finish up with our agency stuff, and then you will have your exam over the weekend. And it will encompass everything we covered since the last exam. So, criminal law, torts, agency, negligence, damages, all of the good stuff. And who knows, you may get a quiz on Wednesday as well. Don't know.